The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you all here today. Thank you for coming. And happy Mother's Day. From the Tibetan perspective, we've all been mothers at one time. So you might be sitting next to your mother. Even bugs, they say, could have been our mother. And you might not like that idea, but sometimes when I've seen praying mantises, I could swear, you've been my mother. So at first, I wasn't sure as I was feeling into this week what I wanted to speak about. And I thought maybe it was something about mothers, but it got really complicated quickly because we have complicated relationships with our mothers. And then I thought I wanted to speak about gratitude. That's when I wake up in the morning and my eyes open. That's the first thing I say. I am grateful to be alive, no matter what. I just say that. I just say, I am grateful to be alive. And I just rest in that simple, profound feeling of being thankful. Just being thankful that I even wake up in a bed, that I can go and get breakfast, that I can see people, that I don't have to dodge bombs walking outside, and so much more. Just that feeling of being thankful, which being grateful doesn't seem to be in the forefront much, besieged by what we need, what we don't have, what we need to get. And I thought about how the Buddha emphasized the development of gratitude. One of the most beautiful and rare qualities in the world, to be grateful. And that's, of course, the foundation of generosity. To feel so grateful to have encountered this Dharma. And those of you that are new, just coming in today, the Dharma's rarely encountered, we just chanted, in millions of ages. So to be grateful, whatever brought you here this morning, something is moving in you to turn towards the Dharma, to turn towards the practice of meditation or zazen, a turning around to look at our own heart and mind. To be grateful we have this opportunity to recognize our true home, our true nature, our vastness together, to come out of the dark and into the light. So I was still thinking, what do I want to talk about? And somebody sent me, I have a friend that responds with a lot of emojis. You may have that too. Like to tell about like how they're doing. There's like a whole series of, and you got to be careful because there's all these faces and some have like, you know. And this time they sent me a big dragon with a, and a big heart flying out of its kiss. And I thought, that's it. I want to talk about dragons. So there is a history of dragons in the tradition, and and I was thinking about a wilderness retreat we went on with women. We used to do wilderness retreats each year, and one of our themes was we were the Nagas. The Nagas are the water dragons, the water serpents, part human, part snake or dragon. And they took the Dharma under the water to preserve it until it was time for people to hear. And Nagarjuna was the one who received these teachings to bring up to us. And so Naga. So I was titled Lady Naga as the leader. So I got to be Lady Naga for a week. So grateful to be a dragon, an enlightened being. And I was inspired by a passage by Dogen, who was a very brilliant 13th century Zen teacher. Our training is based on a lot of what he set up for us in the Mountains and Rivers Order. And he wrote a fascicle called King of Samadhi, or the King of Concentration, or the King of Wise Meditation. And in that it says, Shakyamuni Buddha said to the assembly, when you sit in the meditation posture, you realize samadhi in body and mind. Samadhi is absorption or concentration, just like we were doing, just like the period before, really like that. And give rise to an awesome virtue that people respect. Like the sun illuminating and refreshing the world, this sitting removes obscurities from the mind and lightens the body so that exhaustion is set aside. Enlightenment becomes as natural as a dragon curled up at rest. A demon is frightened even by a picture of someone sitting in meditation posture. How much more so by a living person who realizes the way, sitting motionless and at ease. In another fascicle by Dogen entitled Fukan Zazengi, which means it's the fundamentals of Zazen that he wrote. Speaking of Zazen, he said, once its heart is grasped, the heart of Zazen, you are like a dragon when they are in the water, like the tiger when they enter the mountain. So it's speaking about being in our natural element, right? You may not feel like that at first, but you're actually returning to naturalness. And it takes a while because we've kind of got to straighten out a bit. Yeah. So when a dragon enters the water and a tiger enters the mountain, they are in their true element. Likewise, we enjoy our original nature, our true element, when we are totally engaged in the Zazen. Engaged wholeheartedly in anything, like just walking. We're in our element. If we're just walking, we're in our element. Being a person of suchness, it's often called. So in Zen literature, the dragon has many roles and many different kinds of fingers. Some have six, some had five. Sometimes they're wonderful water-dwelling creatures who bring good fortune. Sometimes it's a symbol of enlightenment, a symbol for ourselves. For example, meeting the dragon in the blue cave. That's a symbol for ourselves, meeting ourselves in ourselves, a metaphor for meeting our deepest fears and obstacles. A demon. And this demon is frightened even by a picture of someone sitting in the meditation posture. How much more so by a living person who realizes the way, sitting motionless and at ease. So this encounter with ourselves and our obstacles or demons, as they're called, is a common experience. You might look over the last two periods and you might have met a few. All these strange and wonderful beings that come to visit us when we're sitting. So my teacher, Daito Roshi, often spoke of the cave of blue dragon as where we store our psychological, he called it our psychological bilge, all our stuff, so to speak. And it's where it's difficult to go. And so it takes a certain degree of fearlessness to face this dragon. And this dragon's holding a pearl. So the dragon is holding a jewel, a pearl. Roshi writes, "In the cave of the blue dragon, the forest of patterns is clearly revealed. The way we function, what we're about, where we're sticking, what the buttons are, all the myriad forms of our routines and denials are evident. It is in the cave of the blue dragon that we find out about ourselves. And it is in the cave of the blue dragon that the one bright pearl is hidden. That one bright pearl is being intimate with all that is presented. Its radiance fills the universe and is present whether we realize it or not." So engaging in our zazen, we see things that arise and we might let them go, or if we just see them, sometimes we see they disappear, arise and disappear as a thought. And it's that place where we meet some things that are difficult. And a large makeup of what appears, I think, is our fears, because it underlines so much. And this might come in the form of anger or anxiety, jealousy, just an anxious moment, a jealous moment. And going underneath that, we might see what lies at deeper down is we're afraid of something. Dido writes, "In the cave of the blue dragon, fear is one of the central themes of our lives and what we work with in our practice life, examining fear. We may find it is often based in the past, something we've carried for many years. We come by it honestly, and when we turn inward, studying the self, it becomes quite evident and accessible what we are thinking, what we are reifying." And they were able to really question ourselves, is what am I believing right now, is it actually true? Is this true, this fear and this dread? And can we just stay with it? What is this fear? So here's what the dictionary says. And usually when we go to the dictionary with Buddhism, it's like a whole other world. But this one I think works. It says, "Fear is an agitation or dismay in the anticipation of danger or harm." An agitation or dismay in the anticipation of danger or harm. So a good part of what makes fear work is the anticipation based on the past that's in our mind, in our DNA, in our body, sometimes frozen in our body. Our mind goes way ahead and we still have something left in our body. I'll talk about that in a moment. So we can go through life fearing death, fearing life. I remember I was at a seniors retreat and a lot of people were talking, we were talking about life and death, and many people were talking about death and if they were fearing the process or death itself. And I realized I had a lot of fear of life, of just living fully. And there we are, caught between two iron mountains, as they say. We're afraid we're going to die, or we're afraid we're going to live. Caught between those two mountains. And we wonder how we'll deal with all the difficulties of our life, creating fear of failure and fear of success. So some of us have a bit of that, right? Where we want to succeed, but we're afraid to fail, and then we're afraid like we're succeeding. Interesting. I don't think I'm alone in that, right? And the experience of fearlessness is fully dependent on the experience of fear. It's not ignoring fear. It's more like acknowledging it. Yeah. And being empowered by it, metabolizing the sensations of where, how it's landing within us, in the body, and then use that demon, meet that demon. But usually when we meet something that we fear, we want it out. We want to get rid of it really quickly. And it gets stronger. Do you ever have a dream of like the demon or the monster chasing you? Everyone has, just about, right? And do we ever turn around and look? Like usually we're going. But there's a moment sometimes where in the dream you actually turn around and look. I don't know if you've had that happen to you, but it changes form really quickly. And there's a vulnerability. Like if you can look at this, it's us, of course. But sometimes you look it in the eyes and it just goes like... And it just wants us, it's like just wants to be seen. But we're so scared we keep going and don't turn around. So in this practice, we're kind of turning around to face everything. And years ago, I did a retreat with Sukhne Rinpoche. He's a Tibetan teacher. And he had a practice, which I'm going to share with you, called Befriending Our Beautiful Monsters. So amazing. Meeting the, going into the blue dragon's cave to see that pearl we possess. And so he says, this is a practice that can help us show up with a clear mind and a sense of okayness that is calm, present, compassionate, and kind towards ourselves and others in all situations. So he says, first, to learn to drop the thinking mind. As you're sitting, and if this is visiting, drop the thinking mind. Don't you worry, it's going to come back. So for a few minutes, drop it, okay? Just drop in and find the stillness within the movement. Just drop in and find the stillness within the movement. He says, then shake hands with the beautiful monster. That is, with the strong, raw emotions, like the anger, the anxiety, the unease, the turbulence, the aloneness, the grief, the loss, the unworthiness, the sadness, the shame, the hollowness, da-da. These are just names for things. Buddha said we have 86,000 emotions. So who knows what category, but we go into the sensation, because when we drop in and we just feel that, we know that also that suppressing doesn't work. Ignoring, indulging, and fixing doesn't work. There's nothing to fix. So how do we appreciate this part of ourself, respect, accept, and be with difficult emotions? We can create enough space in our mind, in our heart, to see strong emotions, which are leftover residues, blockages perhaps, from old experiences, memories. So we don't need to personally identify with them. That's a hard thing. We don't, right? Because you get that feeling and you think, this is me. This is mine, right? We make it personal. In a sense, we're experiencing something, yes. But we don't own this. It's just a movement. It's a sensation, a strong sensation that comes. So the power move here is to understand that we are not our emotions. Allow them to be seen, metabolized, and released. And be patient, because this doesn't mean you sit down one time and it's poof, gone. Like some of my strongest emotions, raw emotions and fears, years. And little by little, being seen and released from that personal part takes a while. Some go quickly, and some are so deeply there that we just have to be patient and accept and keep respecting all parts of us. That's what the dragon does. And as we're doing this, seeing at the same time, we can cultivate a very clear, lucid mind, an open heart, and a very embodied, grounded response as it's there. We can ground ourselves with the earth, with our seat. We're always supported. It might feel like you're just swimming in an abyss, but there is support. And so we can develop a kind of trust we might not be able to see. And we can explore, he says, how being with difficult emotions with non-judgmental, compassionate, embodied awareness allows them to naturally open and transform. And revealing the innate well-being and what Sokni calls dropping it into the essence love, which is the core of our being, which is who we are. We drop it into our essence of love. And to really begin to understand, we have this opportunity of how the cognitive mind, the thinking mind, can keep us trapped in cycles of emotional struggle, especially by trying to fix ourselves. What's wrong with me? What's right? It's just right. Of course, we're feeling. We're sentient beings. We're sensuous. We're sentient. We have sensations. So to feel these cycles of emotional struggle, not by trying to fix, change, ignore, or run away from what we are feeling, rather meeting it with direct, kind awareness. And then little by little, day by day, as we practice embracing sensations and bringing our attention back to the breath, we develop ki, energy, jariki, power of concentration on our breath, on what's real and true, the practice of sitting, where we can watch the flow of thoughts without analyzing, without judging, judging, or understanding them. We may not even understand where it comes from, why. Why might not be a good question? Maybe how? Or what? What? Okay, here we go. And that builds confidence almost imperceptibly to be with that. And I was thinking back to when starting Zazen, how many of us think, meditation. Right? Now I will enter the realm of bliss and peace because I'm meditating, a profound ocean. I'm going to get away from all the troubles and anxieties. Oh my God. I'm going to be peaceful. It's going to be great. And then we find out, ooh, this doesn't feel so good. My body hurts. My leg's asleep. But we're always in our element. And we begin to see we don't always accept. So, Zazen is a way of becoming more natural. And I was thinking of inconvenience. I always love Pema Chodron. She writes a lot about the inconvenience state and how when we, the reality of sitting down is things get very inconvenient in some way. And she writes this in this piece. She says, when you hear some teaching that rings true to you and you feel some kind of trust in practicing the way and some trust in it being worthwhile, a worthwhile way to live, then you're in for a lot of inconvenience. I was like, oh my God, what do we do with that? So from an everyday perspective, it seems okay to do some things that are kind of inconvenient. There's no problem with this, but when we take the path of the Buddha Dharma and we sit down, how true this really is, we see that when we turn towards practice, when we feel a passion to grow, have the sense there has to be more to all of this, when discovery and exploration and curiosity become our path, she basically says, when we follow our heart, we're going to meet inconvenience. So what kind of wisdom can be drawn from that kind of statement with, given our strong propensity for comfort, entitlement, shortcuts, reactivity, wanting the path of least resistance? How is it when we sit down and it's not peaceful? It's not a realm of bliss, an ocean of bliss. And we're in the middle of the storm, in the middle of the ocean, and all of a sudden, whoa, it dawns on us, that storm is our mind. Just to say, we're not alone in that. Don't think that you're someone special because you've got your own storm going. We're not alone. So that's good to know when we see this. Because it's so easy to think with everyone sitting here, you're the only one that's like swimming in some ocean of turbulence, right? Everyone else seems perfectly fine. Judging, analyzing. It's just me. So it is initially uncomfortable, unsettling, embarrassing. Some of the things that come up, we're like, really? So we might notice as we sit here when we're in a very inconvenient state. And maybe we think about leaving. How many times have I said that to myself? I'm sitting there and I'm just like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm leaving, right? I want to go home. I don't want to be here. So I'm not quite here, and I'm also not quite there. So we call that the bardo. We're sort of in an in-between state. We think it might be convenient, more convenient over there at home or someplace else. And I remember in a retreat, I was pretty new as an attendant in the Zendo, and a woman came up to me and she says, I want to leave. I want to go home. And I said, well, can I bring you into my teacher just to let him know? Because I really didn't know how to handle it. So I brought her in and I said, Daito so-and-so would like to leave. And he says, you can go. But you can never leave. And he was so kind. He didn't shame her. He says, like, you can go, but you can never leave. Whatever you're working with, honey. So we practice Sazen to come back to now, to the actual right now, in this moment self, coming back to self, coming back to naturalness, the intimacy and simplicity of our true nature. And little by little, the chatter drops away, and our body and breath and mind unify. And we develop a unified mind, samadhi. So the practice isn't about reaching 10, but we'll see ourselves. Who's not the one that's like, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. I want 10, right? Like, I just want one. Like, what? Maybe two without like flying off, right? And coming back. So it's not to get to 10. It's training our body and mind to rest and settle in the breath, in now. Let the mind settle, connected to that, bringing that all together. And in that, all that comes up because we're getting natural. Don't worry if the practice is working. Don't judge your performance. Don't tell another story to avoid this present moment, right? We'll go another story. It's hard. This is the razor's edge of our two truths, of our one aspect of our nature that is vast, boundless, absolute, unnameable, and another part of us that is in this body, has our karma, has this relative life, relationships, and those two exist simultaneously. The outer form helps us by organizing and directing our energies, Zazen, the posture. And we carry our form with dignity, with respect, being grateful we can enter the dragon's cave. There's a story I wanted to share. It's a popular story. Dogen tells it. Other teachers do too. It's a dragon story, of course. Yang Kutsu is a man who loved dragons. He studied dragon lore and decorated his home with paintings and statues of dragons. He had tattoos of dragons. He had cups with dragons, napkins with dragons, sheets with dragons, wallpaper with dragons. He loved dragons. He would talk on and on about dragons to anybody who would listen. One day, a dragon heard about him and thought, how lovely, this man appreciates us so much. It would surely make him happy to meet a true dragon. So the kindly dragon came out of the water and flew to Yang Kong Tzu's house and went inside to find Ye fast asleep. So then Ye woke up and saw the dragon coiled by his bed, its scales and teeth glittering in the moonlight, and Ye screamed in terror. Before the dragon could introduce himself, Yang grabbed his sword and lunged at the dragon. The dragon flew away. Common is many generations of Chan and Zen teachers, including Dogen, have mentioned the true dragon story in their teachings. For example, in Fukan Zazengi that I mentioned, Dogen wrote, I beseech you, noble friends, in learning through experience, do not become so accustomed to images that you are dismayed by the true dragon. You. We just get scared of ourselves. And before it can introduce itself to us, we got our fangs out and our sword and we want to chop it up. But it just wants to say, hi, I heard you love dragons. What about it? So here's the quote again. Shakyamuni Buddha said to the assembly, When you sit in the meditation posture, you realize samadhi in body and mind and give rise to an awesome virtue that people respect. Like the sun illuminating and refreshing the world, this sitting removes obscurities from the mind and lightens the body so that exhaustion is set aside. Enlightenment becomes as natural as a dragon curled up at rest. A demon is frightened even by a picture of someone sitting in the meditation posture. How much more so by a living person who realizes the way, sitting motionless and at ease. I love that imagery of giving rise to an awesome virtue and the sun illuminating, and suddenly it's clear what was obscure. Even a demon, our little demons pull away when they see us sitting. They just pull away. Oh, I'm getting attention. And this illuminating quality of concentration and focus comes. And this realizing that samadhi is right here. So it's not, I will attain samadhi. It's not a theory or an abstract thing, but it's right in our breath and right in our body now, just as we engage fully. Sitting in samadhi, we give rise to an awesome virtue that people respect. Consider this awesome virtue. Perhaps you don't even know it or notice it, which is really good. It arises when you sit. And you offer it to others as you walk out the door. And others feel it. Don't you feel it when you meet someone who has that? That it just illuminates us. We feel the concentration. We feel the absorption. It's very powerful. And if we're not careful, we might discover, we might find our true nature, who we really are, and how it functions in the world. I see it over and over again with people that practice this marvelous thing, this shift, this focus on the individual self, to realizing that who we are is much bigger. And we become like this dragon that kind of settles into the world in our stillness, in the movement. This is wisdom when we settle in. The wisdom before knowing, the way the dragon does to our samadhi, to our demons, our certainty, settling in to our certainty, our viciousness, our anger, our pettiness. They become frightened by the power of samadhi, of this dragon that sits, that is part of everything in the world. So to be grateful for your concentration that can work with the horrors of the world right now. Be grateful, not hiding from the injustice of the world as we sit here on this Sunday morning. We're arming ourselves, in a sense, with stability, with concentration, with loving kindness, metta, with wisdom, so that we can act, not react. Respond, be responsible, so we can calm our hearts and minds and our own conditioning, so that we can act in a kind and merciful way. And when we get up, let's not block the way. We're not living in a cloud. We're living in this world, and a few minutes you're going to walk down Samsara State Street into many other avenues. So to offer your concentration and love. And soon we'll restate our intention, chanting the four vows. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. We don't chant, sentient beings are numberless, and I vow to save only those I agree with. No. How can we find it in our hearts to serve them all, to attend to the whole picture? So I'll close with a verse from the Cave of the Blue Dragon, which is your blue dragon, and it's your one bright pearl. This is Daido Roshi's verse. Each crisis, an opportunity. Yet if you fail to act, you miss it by 1,000 miles. The Cave of the Blue Dragon is ominous. Only the fearless dare to enter. It is here that the forest of patterns is clearly revealed, the myriad forms evident. It is here that the one bright pearl is hidden. So, let her rip. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.